Listen up, ladies and gentlemen.
This is
Cinemasters Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the long-awaited episode 49 of the Cinemasters Podcast. As always, I am Daniel James.
I'm Andrew Miller.
And I'm Tyler Crouch.
Yeah, that's all we have for today. Not sure where the other guys are. Well, I'm sure that Rudy is busy. I'm sure Jacob is busy with something as well, but Rudy didn't have internet until a few days ago, so that's that.
That would be a problem. Yeah.
Due to our desire to make this episode mildly short and also lack of any huge news, we're just going to jump in with a quick review of the Gotham pilot. So does anyone want to summarize it? I don't know if there was anything to summarize, really.
Yeah, it's. I mean, basically, the impetus of the show is it begins with Bruce Wayne's parents' murder, and James Gordon, played by Ben McKenzie, is the new cop in town, who is partnered up with what's his name, Harvey
Bullock.
Yeah. Harvey Bullock, the sort of tough. Cop of Gotham who understands that this is a corrupted world and you kind of have to get your hands dirty if you want to survive in it. So already it's basically the pilot is what it's doing is it's establishing this sort of idea of the good cop and then maybe conflicted cop, and the pilot plays out with both of them investigating Bruce Wayne's parents' murder and going through the sort of different mob groups of the city, including Fish Mooney, played by Jada Pinkett Smith, who is being basically has this henchman played by some wonderful new actor who looks who's perfectly cast as Oswald Cobblepot, who's trying to sort of take down Fish Mooney's mob from the inside. And then you also have Carmine Falcone, the other mobster. But basically what this pilot's doing more than anything is two things. One, it's establishing Bruce Wayne as a kid and his murder and his relationship with Gordon, and then the idea of Gordon and his partner and the sort of general idea that in Gotham you can't really be the good guy, quote-unquote, all the time because it's just a corrupt city.
Basically, yeah. I don't know. I was pretty okay with it. There are moments that I really, really enjoyed, like the introduction to Edward Nygma, eventually the Riddler. Just that scene was played very well and subtly and quickly in his introduction. It really struck home for me for some reason. But
which is funny you mentioned that, because that I had the complete opposite reaction. Like, that was probably the worst part of the pilot.
Yeah. Well, the biggest response I had to this pilot was, this is exactly what I don't want out of this show. It's kind of what works in The Flash, because it's The Flash doesn't work in Gotham, where they just go balls to the wall and say, hey, this is the comic book adaptation. We're just going to throw in everything from the comics. Instead of, you know, we're going to make some really cool character choices with Gotham's finest, and, you know, kind of this is in the same world as Batman, but we're not really going to show you that until, you know, later on. It was all like, yeah, these are all of Batman's villains that are eventually going to be. And that is not what I wanted to see. So
Well, I will say all the casting is great, though. I think they all personify their characters well. I mean, look at Edward Nygma, and you kind of, that's kind of, he looks like the Riddler, you know? He kind of, he embodies, and so, and same with the Penguin, Cobblepot. I think, and I like Ben McKenzie a lot, and also like the Harvey Bullock character. I forgot his name, but I like him too. I think he brings a little more edge to that character, and I think they're all great characters. The story was a little lackluster for me for now. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it gets better, but I like the casting choices overall. I think everybody fits.
Yeah, I don't have any problems with the casting generally. I mean, my biggest problem right now is probably twofold. One, it's like you said, Dan, it's they're just trying to push in all this mythos that they're trying to just sort of put into a blender. Mm-hmm. And it's like they're trying to have this tug of war between we want to have this show that's going to be just a sort of general cop show about morality, where nobody's really that comic booky. Like in the final scene, I won't say necessarily what happens, but in the final scene of the doc, which could really just be a show from any cop show, it really has no real ties to, except for who they're dealing with. And then, you know, like a whole first scene with Catwoman that is like, she's not even, doesn't even have a line in the whole.
Yeah, she's basically not just a character. She's a...
Right.
I don't even know what.
And, you know, when the Riddler comes in, there's like, this is my second problem. The writing's really bad, yes. At least for most of the pilot, where the Riddler will come in and he'll have, you know, he'll be proposing a riddle, and then the other guy will be like, "No riddles, Riddler or Enigma."
I wish they had done that reaction to the entire show of
like, that would have been pretty funny. Like if it was a bit, like if the second they meet the Penguin, they're like,
"Well, that was how they treated the Batman mythos of like, no, get out of here. Like, we don't need you.
Right.
That is what I wanted in this show. And that's not what I got. But
the funny thing to me that me and my buddy who are watching it is how they would like be as on the nose as humanly possible about it. Like, enough riddles, Riddler. Or like, you know, cat has milk. So the joke that me and my buddy, when we were watching it, was like when Gordon first goes down to the kid and is like, "What's your name?" He just goes, "I'm Batman."
I'm Batman.
Like, and whenever he comes in, like, he's like, "My name's Batman." Or or one of the other characters is like, "You see that kid? You know that kid's Batman, right?" Mm. It's like, hey, viewers, we want you to know. But it's like, also, I mean, this is so well-trodden ground, at least in terms of Bruce Wayne's story, that if you're going to do it, if you're going to show it, if you're going to show the murder, it's got to be better than that.
Yeah.
Like, it was ridiculous how badly acted that scene was.
The only thing I liked was the scream.
Yeah. There's a nice like point where, where the camera comes from. But it's just so like, I don't like if you're gonna cover things that are so epic and we've pictured in our minds so much, they can't be TV budget. You know what I mean? They gotta have more weight than that. And also the writing, like the dialogue, is just really bad. Like I'll give an example when the two cops are, the partners are in the crime, or in the police station and the crime unit, and basically James Gordon has a couple lines to Harvey where he basically describes him in the adjectives that a bio would describe the character. Like he's like, "You know what, Harvey, you're a slovenly detective. You're a slovenly, like, nut, like, doesn't give a shit detective." I forgot exactly how the wording is, but it's basically just like, imagine like a one sheet to describe the character's like personality, and then have the other character like describe it. It'd be like if Harvey turned to Gordon and was like, "Well, you're a do goody character who I'm gonna have to fight and break down." And also, it's just weirdly paced. Like, why don't we see the characters meet each other? Why don't we see Harvey meet Jane. Like, that'd be so much more rewarding to just have him be introduced randomly with this randomly, like, guy who pulls a gun in the most ridiculous scenario ever, and, like, nobody's watching him, and he just pulls the gun against the cage. I don't know. It just, it doesn't...
Well, I thought they knew each other before then.
Huh?
I thought they knew each other before then.
They do, but I mean, like, why? Like, if we're having this be, and like, a, you know, a new start to Gotham, and he's this new guy who's come into Gotham, why not see the scene where he comes in, and they go, yeah. Hey, I mean, this is Harvey, hey, Harvey, this is James. Why have them just be, like, already together when they already don't have any sort of shorthand anyway? It doesn't really get it, it's weird to have a protagonist who's clearly the protagonist of the show introduced in such a nonchalant way.
I see your point. I agree with that.
I mean, really, I think the show is just struggling with what it wants to be. I mean, but again, this is just the pilot.
Pilots tend to not be epic most of the time.
Pilots can be amazing, but generally they, for people who don't know what their show really is and don't have the singularity of vision, it's a growing pain sort of thing.
Yeah. In my experience, pilots typically suck, apart from The Americans.
Yeah.
The Americans did have a great pilot.
You know who also had a great pilot? The Flash.
Yeah. We'll talk about that when Tyler starts his Flash podcast.
If I have ever time to do that, maybe. You have to be determined.
So, it sounds like we're all pretty meh on the Gotham pilot. I'll be sticking around just to see if that makes any for a few episodes at least. Topical format this time. We're doing road trip movies because majority of us have moved somewhat across the country. Some of us most of the way across the country. like Rudy moved from Detroit to outside of Portland or Seattle. No, no, Pacific Northwest. Like I moved from Arizona to Illinois. Now I'm in Fairfax, Virginia. Tyler, you moved from somewhere in Texas to somewhere in Kentucky? No, Tennessee.
No, I'm in Tennessee. I moved from...
The slightly better one.
Yeah, slightly. We'll say that. It's not too bad. I do miss Texas, though, for sure.
Yeah, and I saw on Facebook that Jacob went down to Disney World, or Disneyland, rather.
Everyone. Yeah, I saw that. And
so, Andrew, I don't know if you've road tripped.
I'm just in L.A. still.
So you road trip anytime you want to go anywhere.
That's somewhat true, yes. If I want to go to Disneyland, I can go to Disneyland.
So, yeah. Anyways, road trips is what we're doing. So, Andrew, due to my completely random... me just choosing who gets to go first. You get to go first.
And I just want to say that I unfortunately never saw any of these movies that we talked. Well, I've seen Away We Go that we're doing, but Smokey the Bandit and Into the Wild, I never saw before now. So I'm actually excited to talk about them now. So
I don't know.
This disclaimer.
When you said. Road trip movies, and none of our movies really depict this, but the second you said it, the song that popped in my head was Laugh Is Your Halloween. I don't think any of our movies have that moment where there's like a camera pullback and the car's driving through different locales. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like when I picture road movie, I picture that moment where
Smoking the Bandit probably has the closest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, when the sun's going up, the sun's coming down, you're in green, you're in desert, you're in, you know.
They have a much cooler road trip song for it, though.
Right. That's true. Okay, well, I mean, I would say that my pick is probably the antithesis of what we think of when we think of road trip movies. Usually when you think of the road trip movie, you think of it as sort of like, it usually starts with characters who are somewhat troubled, but don't, like, they're not in horrible situations. This usually just, there's some sort of problem they're facing personally. And the road trip they go through is sort of like a minor journey. Nothing necessarily huge happens, but it does change their way of viewing certain things. Maybe there's bonding between two characters on the journey, and then at the end they kind of go back home. It's very much like the Joseph Campbell, or what am I saying? The Odyssey, very much like Odyssey wise, you leave home, you go on a journey, then you come back more positive about where you were. My movie's not like that. My movie's very substantial journey because, I'll just in case, let me introduce it. It's Into the Wild. This is a Sean Penn directed film back from, I want to say, 05, 06?
07.
07, thank you. 07 stars Emile Hirsch and a sort of murderer's row of character actors who come in throughout the film. Based off of a real story about McCandless. I'm going to make sure I get the name right. Does anyone have... Sorry.
Christopher.
Hold on. Yeah, Christopher McCandless.
McCandless.
Then he calls himself...
Supertramp.
Alexander Supertramp.
Supertramp, right. So basically a little background is this was a real person, a young, sort of young 20s... boy who had a fairly good upbringing. I mean, he was a sort of normal middle-class upbringing who decides for no real direct reason, to sort of more of an existential angst, to just go away and travel to Alaska, basically just to get out. This sort of just to travel on and be part of the wild. And throughout his journey, he meets various interesting folk. And I mean, it's based on his book, which basically what happened was, spoiler alert, if anyone's seen this. I mean, I'm gonna have to talk about the ending simply because it's an important part of of the movie. But basically, when he goes to Alaska in real life, he wrote a journal. And the book that this movie's based off is partially based on the journal he wrote and also on his family members and the story of who he met on his way to Alaska and whatnot. But I mean, it's hard for me to talk about the movie without talking about the ending, so I'm just going to get there because I think when in dealing with road trip movies, you deal with the destination a lot and what happens, you know, to these people. Mm. He goes up to Alaska. He stays out in the wilderness. He finds this sort of dilapidated trailer and stays there just completely by himself out in a very, very dangerous place. I mean, he sort of romanticizes this idea of the wilderness as like, I'm going to be this sort of pioneer, but he doesn't take into the fact that the wilderness is hard and rough and dangerous. Through very simple circumstances, just through basically poisoning and berry poisoning, just sort of a simple biological thing that could have been solved in a hospital, he ends up dying alone out in this Alaska wilderness in this trailer. The movie is really interesting in that it doesn't really take necessarily that too hard of a side on... Basically, it doesn't judge the character harshly. It doesn't it doesn't give credence to his idea of like, we should, you know, just get out there, society, man, just go be free. It definitely shows the pain of that, because I mean, the movie doesn't take a slight eye away from the pain that this guy ends up going through, and his horrible, I mean, his death scene in this movie is probably one of the most harrowing death scenes I've ever seen. But it also has this sort of, it's hard to watch the movie and not become romanticized with this guy's vision of just going out there. I mean, he meets all these characters throughout his journey, and even the characters have this sort of moments of like, they're kind of in awe of this kid and his willingness to sort of just go and just be free from what tethers you to society. But I think the main difference between this and most road movies is every character in this movie, his sister, the wise old man, wonderful, wonderful character. I think Academy Award nominated by Hal Holbrook.
Yep.
They all come to love this guy, Christopher. And basically, when it gets to the point where he's like, hey, I have to get going, almost each of them are like, no, you actually don't. Like, you've found your home here. I understand that you felt like you weren't connected to your family for some reason, but you can stay here. You don't have to keep going. And he always is sort of scared and turns away, especially with Hal Holbrook's character, who, I mean, a big part of the movie is he feels distance from his parents, and Hal Holbrook becomes a sort of surrogate father figure. But I think it's interesting that most of these movies, including Smoking the Bandit and Away We Go, you know, it ends pretty, you know, they come back home in a way. And their journey is one of complete positivity. In Into the Wild, he really doesn't have a home, or at least he feels like he doesn't. But throughout the movie, he's given these homes, but he kind of turns away from it.
Well, I think on that, I mean, I agree with you about how Smoking the Bandit and Away We Go, they ended on a more of a happy home boat, but I think it ends at him going home, finally feeling that point where he was okay. You know, you notice at the end of the movie he was okay with dying. He you saw it in his eyes. You know, yeah, it kind of, still kind of sucked, but he was where he wanted to be, and I think that's where he found his home. Though, I mean, he had many opportunities to be in away from his parents and be in a home, way better home than he was.
Right.
But I still think he ended up going home.
Yeah, there is a sense that he achieves what he wants to achieve.
And so he didn't die for nothing, in his mind.
In his mind, yes. But I think the movie does a good job of sort of not taking sides.
Yeah, I agree.
Between, like, should he really have done that, but also he got what he sort of wanted. And I think the way Emil Hirsch plays him is interesting. You never really know a lot about him. He's sort of a bit of a cipher. You get to see some of his background, but his personality doesn't really – like, he's sort of this constant wanderer who never really truly opens up. And I think that's an interesting choice to make, just because he's sort of this enigma. Even his sister can't really put his finger on exactly what – he wants in life, and I don't think he does either. I think that's kind of why he keeps running. But it's definitely a fascinating movie, and I think it appeals to the idea of road trip movies that we're talking about, simply because a large chunk of this movie is him meeting these different people on his journey, and I think that a lot of road trip movies have that. I Know Away We Go definitely has that.
Oh, yeah. There's
different stops, and you meet different people from different walks of life, and they sort of color your experiences. And so even though the road trip ends up being a very solemn trip, it's definitely what we think of when we think of a trip, a road trip, and that you're really going through the country and meeting different views and walks of life.
Yeah, and when we think road trip, we think usually cars, but that's not always the case.
Right. Sure. You know? I mean, a lot of the time he's really hitchhiking.
Yeah.
So he's kind of being put into these different scenarios. He's almost not even willing to take his own direction. Mm-hmm. He's just kind of going where. I mean, it defines him that he's just kind of going where it takes him.
Yes.
Also, I would say critically, I love this movie. I was a big fan of this movie when it came out. I still am. It's a very underrated movie. And I don't think Sean Penn has directed a movie since this, but he has a very distinct, surprisingly sentimental view. You wouldn't think Sean Penn would be sort of that heartfelt about, you know, he tends to be a very grouchy person in real life. Mm-hmm. But he has a very intimate sort of style of filmmaking.
No, like I said, the first time I watched it this morning, actually, you know, I rented it last night, and was able to watch it today and, you know, give my full attention to it. And because I've been meaning to watch it, and then, you know, it was funny that actually I've been meaning to watch Smokey Bandit and Into the Wild, and it was funny that you both of you chose those movies. I was like, well, you know, now it's time to buckle down and watch these movies. And I'll tell you, Into the Wild, I did love it. I enjoyed the movie. You know, and I never noticed the time. You know, it was like a 2.5 hour movie, 2 hours and 30 so minutes. You know, and I really never noticed it because it just kept me engaging and kind of. And I was worrying about this character the whole time. You know, and I didn't even realize Zach Galifianakis is in this movie.
Right,
which is funny, and you know, Vince, I love Vaughn. And Vince Vaughn's so many, character.
Yeah,
you know, and everybody did a very well, good job, you know, acting in it. I think I loved Ron's character the most out of all the people he met, because he was the one person who truly cared for him. You know, everybody else cared for him, but I think that one scene when Ron was dropping him off, and he asked him, "Hey, I want to adopt you because I have no one else. I have no legacy. I have nobody to carry on my name." You know, that kind of that. Oh, I'll tell you, I teared up a little bit. You kind of seeing it because I didn't know any about this, but I felt like that he was never going to make it back to him before
he. Right. That yeah. Happen. At that point in the movie, because that's pretty late in the movie, at that point you get this feeling like, oh, this guy, because the movie isn't linear. It cuts. Yeah. It, by that point, you get this feeling like, oh, this kid's not going to make it. Yeah, and so when you're seeing this scene where Hal Holbrook just breaks down and it says, like, you really don't have to go. You don't have to run. Like, I'm here for you. And he just can't do it. He can't accept it. For some reason, inside him, he just cannot stop running.
And, you know, it was heartbreaking to see that because I wanted him to, you know – the family that he came from was just that's very toxic. You know, that's never a good environment to be in, especially growing up. And you know, and it was something that he needed reprieve from. And then I felt like with Ron, at least he would have gotten that and gotten what he needed in life from him.
Right.
He didn't need to go to Alaska to find that. So.
Right. I mean, yeah. That's why it's somewhat of the anti-road movie in that he never. He the whole idea of the road movie is coming home in a certain way or turning back and realizing what you had. He never realizes that. He never really gets that realization of I'm at peace. I can settle down. The road trip never stops for him, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say the one scene that got me the most was when he found out he was poisoned. Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man. You know, it's just that one simple mistake that he made.
Yeah. Something so little that just...
Yeah.
And that could easily be fixed. I mean, it's just that he's alone. He has no one. Yeah. And so nobody can find him and give him any medical help. And he's just out in the complete unknown, just emptiness.
Yeah, he started out alone, and he ended alone.
Right.
So.
Awesome. That's a good place to end. I haven't had time to watch either of the other two, so I'm just going to be quiet. Over here. While Tyler goes into his movie.
Okay. I did the movie Away We Go, directed by the Academy Award winner Sam Mendes. He directed American Beauty and Skyfall. Skyfall. He's going to direct the next two James Bond movies. It stars John Krasinski and Maya Rudolph as the main characters. Bert in Verona, basically, kind of an overview of the movie is they live together. They're not married, but basically in the beginning of the movie, they're in bed and kind of
I don't want to get too into it because it's kind of funny. It's a little graphic.
I'll say just a side story for that. I saw this movie with my mom.
Yeah.
And it's for most of it is a wonderful movie to see with
your
parents.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
But I knew that first scene because I'd read it somewhere. So before we let it, I was like, Mom, I got to warn you. This first scene is going to be a little rough for both of us. Once it's over, we'll get over it. And it's fine.
Should we talk about the scene or no?
Sure.
Okay. Just if you have kids who listen to our podcast, you know, parents, skip through about a minute or so.
Earmuffs.
They're basically in bed. John Krasinski's performing cunnilingus on Maya Rudolph's character. And it's funny because he said something. They're talking, and he says, "Hey, you taste funny." And then he was kind of going off, and he was saying, well, the reason it can change is if they're on menstrual cycle or if she's pregnant. And right after she said – or he never really says it, but she looks at him, and he looks at her, and she just slaps him in the face off the bed. That's basically how the movie starts.
Yeah.
So you're laughing, but if you're with your child or someone, your parents or whatever, it's kind of awkward. But if you're with, like, your – significant other or someone like that or friends, then it's hilarious. You know, it's really funny because, you know, she didn't have to say the other one and she just knows, boom. And so that's, and then it cuts to her pregnant laying on the bed. And so basically they are trying to figure out where they want to live and raise their child. So first they go to Bert's parents' house, who is played by Jeff Daniels and Catherine O'Hara. Great actors. You know, this whole movie has an A-list cast, in my opinion, I think, of everybody. I love John Krasinski. If you know me, you know I love The Office. It's my favorite show of all time. Jim Halpert is the man. So they go visit their parents, and they decided they wanted to move to Belgium, and so they're not even going to be around for the child's birth. So they kind of said, okay, well, we're not going to move close to you. And so then they go to Phoenix, Arizona, and Verona's old boss, played by Allison Janney and Jim Gaffigan. Like I said, great actors. You know, Jim Gaffigan is hilarious, and Allison Janney, she just won a Emmy Award, I think, for her show Mom or something, but she's a great actress too. So they go to Phoenix, Arizona, and they realize, oh wow, they are really not the best people she remembered them as, and that they basically hated their own lives. So like, okay, why do we want to move to Phoenix? And so then, and this day, I'll kind of touch on every place they go. I mean, it's not a lot of places. And so then they leave, because this is more of the iconic road trip movie. They're going from place to place, like Andrew was saying. We're actually going destination to destination with a purpose, and then we're leaving. And so next they go to Madison, Wisconsin. They go to Tucson, Arizona. Sorry. To see Verona's sister. And they kind of realize, oh, hey, Grace is kind of not having a good time with her boyfriend. And, you know, Bert ended up telling her, hey, she's lucky to have her boyfriend that should marry him. And it kind of got awkward. So they're like, oh, okay, we're just going to leave again. So then they leave. And then they go to Madison, Wisconsin and meet, quote-unquote, Bert's cousin. Really not cousins, but it's played by Maggie Gyllenhaal. And the first scene that you see with Maggie Gyllenhaal, she is breastfeeding her kids. And her kids are like 6 years old still. You know, it's kind of reminded me of Game of Thrones-esque, you know, scene. Oh, man, hey, kind of, let's fall off.
Make the small man fly.
Yeah, make the small man fly, mommy. kind of just like, let's get off the teat a little bit. But, yeah, so, and she's basically a hippie. Her and her husband, or whatever they call each other, are hippies, and they invite her over, they notice that she doesn't have a stroller. And you know, I'll tell you, this is probably one of my favorite parts, the scenes of the movie, is they had brought a stroller over because they saw that she didn't have one, and she was like, oh, we don't want him to be tied down. We want him to walk everywhere and be free and not confined into a stroller. Well, Maggie Gyllenhaal was talking crap to Verona, and Bert kind of just said, that's enough, we're leaving, and blah, blah, and stormed down and said, she's a better person than you, and blah, blah, blah. So he walks out in the room, and he comes back with a stroller, and he's like, hey, get in, get in, get in. And, you know, all Maggie Gyllenhaal and, her husband's characters kind of go with nuts. Like, no, get, you choose what you want to do. Do what you want to do. We're not going to make that choice for you. And then the kid gets in the stroller, and John's character was just running around, kind of like giving a race car and the feeling of a stroller. You know, it was a great scene overall. It just showed the diversity of the characters and kind of how crazy they were. So then they leave there. And then they end up going to Montreal to visit their old college friends. His wife had two miscarriages. She had literally had a miscarriage the Thursday before they got there. But they had adopted three or four children, you know, and kind of they said they loved Montreal, but it was just kind of not for them. So then they leave, and then he gets a call from his Bert gets a call from his brother down in Miami. His wife had just left him and left their young daughter, and kind of going through that. And then basically at the end, Verona, in kind of a context, Verona's parents had died when she was 22, and you know, she on basically the last 20 minutes. Was kind of Verona told a story about her childhood, and a memory about her old home that she grew up in. And you know, John character looked at her and realized that he wanted, because throughout this whole movie, John had asked her to marry him, and she kept saying no. You know, I am assuming that's because of the death of her parents. She didn't want to be married because of that. Because what I guess what it brings, she does want to have that loss or whatnot. Kind of, you never really get a sense of why she wants it, but you kind of can infer. But basically, they are on their final journey to that home, and they walk through it, and John comes out and sees her, and they just look at each other, and then they finally realize this is where we need to raise our family. This is where we need to be. So it was kind of a coming of age story for them, themselves. And throughout this whole time, he's trying to find a new job in all these different cities, so they can move there. Nothing really ever goes through. But with this whole movie, you know, it kind of is a growing of age story for these people. Having a child is a journey in itself. It's a road trip of having a child, and the many highs and lows that can come with that. I thought it was well directed, well acted throughout. Like I said, I love John Krasinski and I love Maya Rudolph. They had very good chemistry, and you know, that's kind of. And I had seen this movie when it first came out back in 2009, because I wanted to see it just because of John. And you know, I'm glad I did see it, and I'm glad I rewatched it again and got to re-fall in love with it and why I love the movie in the first place. It didn't really get the best reviews coming out, but I think over time, if people go back and watch the movie, they'll understand why that it is a good movie and why I like it so much. So. Andrew, have you seen this movie? I know Dan said he... Okay. What's your take on it?
I love this movie. I was a huge fan of this movie when it came out. I think it's incredibly underrated. I was just looking up the reviews of it again, because I remember when it came out, it got fairly middling reviews.
Mm.
Some people fucking loved it. Like, I remember there were a couple people who were, like rah-rah for it, but most people were pretty much, it's all right. I was, like, 100%. Fully, I think it was like in my top five that year. partially because it just it comes out of nowhere from Sam Mendes. I mean, I've always thought he was a wonderful director, but it's completely different tonally from what he usually does, and stylistically. I mean, it's very, it feels very improvisational. He's very much about, I mean, Sam Mendes is very obsessed with staging and very artful shots, and this he's sort of more just sort of feeling the mood. I mean, interestingly enough, I remember there was something interesting about the writing behind it, so I looked it up. It's written by Dave Eggers, a very famous writer, and his wife, which is a really interesting thing because, it's, you know, it's all about marriage, but this was written by a married couple. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can't give enough praise to the movie. I think it's both light on its feet, but also has a lot of weight to it. It's episodic, but also feels like it's part of one whole. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, it's also one of the most modern movies about parenting I can think of, because I mean, a lot of it is them sort of trying to find the right way to parent. Like somehow there's this sort of right answer, and so they, you know, they see these different people who are hippie and then who are super conservative and who are divorced and who are adopted kids and blah. And it's a lot of movie. I think if the movie was handled worse, it would come off as being heavy handed or cynical, mm-hmm. but it's really a very heartfelt movie in that. And again, in no ways does this feel heavy handed. And if it was a studio movie, it probably would. But by the end of the movie, it's really just comes to the idea of, like, there is no right way. We're going to have hardship. But as long as we truly love each other and have love, that's really all we can sort of have. But it's worth it. That's worth enough. There is no right way to parent as long as you truly love each other and love your children. And it's interesting. I was just reading a review because I was looking up reviews for this, and one review that was positive for it pointed out, like, it's refreshing to have a movie where the two main characters' love is never in question. The conflict of this movie is not like, will this having a baby pull them apart? We don't know. Like, it's clear these people are truly in love with each other, and I think that's a big kudos to the two actors. Mm-hmm. But I think it's refreshing to have a movie where that's not the focus. The focus is more on, like, are we good enough to be parents? What is this? You know, how do we focus it? How do we make sure we are better than our family and our friends, but also sort of appreciating the different styles that they have and sort of judging that. And also the movie does a really good – walks a really, really impressive tightrope between comedy and just complete and utter – heartbreaking drama, where there's a couple amazing scenes, Chris Messina and I'm just going to say Mark Maron Danowitz from Parks and Recreation. Yeah. That was real name. And in a lesser director's hands, it would not mesh well, but in this, it just flows. The sort of different emotions flow so well into each other. And I mean, you mentioned the acting. The acting's incredible from top to bottom. I mean, it's particularly Maya Rudolph and John Krasinski in parts that we really haven't. Krasinski's somewhat like Jim-esque, but I mean, I would think that there's actually he's playing different colors this time around. But Maya Rudolph, we've really never seen like this before, and they just both do a wonderful job. And I mean, like you said, the supporting cast is full of who's who of people you might not higher like Gaffigan, but who totally play their parts to a T. It's just a wonderful little movie. I mean, it's really not talked about as much as I think it should be, but definitely deserves to be checked out, especially if you want a sort of warm experience.
Awesome. That's definitely one I'm going to have to check out. Sounds really good. Cool. Now on to the most straight up fun one, I guess, which would be my pick, which is Smokey and the Bandit. A nice little, I don't know, I guess road trip movie, more so a chase movie. Did we lose Tyler? Yeah, we did.
He's... Okay. He went on his own road trip.
Yeah. So yeah, Smoking the Bandit, fun little movie, written by Hal Needham, Robert Levy, world story by them, screenplay by James Lee Barrett, Charles Shire, Alan Mandel, and directed by Hal Needham, and starring Burt Reynolds, Sally Field, Jerry Reed, and the great Jackie Gleason. Came out in 1977, and yeah, it's... The story of the movie is Burt Reynolds plays the bandit and comes across Little Enos and Big Enos, who say they need 400 cases of Coors Light brought from Texarkana, Texas, back to somewhere in Florida, I believe. So basically illegal smuggling of beer across state lines. And along the way, they pick up Sally Field's character, and she is being chased by Sheriff Buford T. Justice of Texarkana, Texas, because she ran away from a wedding with his son. And hilarity ensues. And then roll credits. That is the entire movie. Not very plot heavy. Doesn't need to be, because it's fantastic and hilarious. Yeah, I don't know. I really just wanted to watch this movie. I don't know what there is to say about it.
Well, we can say Sally Field was a babe.
That is definitely true.
She was definitely a good. Oh, she still is a good looking woman. But I was just saying Sally Field back in the day. Ooh.
Oof. Yeah, Smokey could refer to her for sure.
Yeah. No, I'll I guess. Say what?
I was just going to say, I'll have to recluse myself because I haven't seen it.
Yeah, no, definitely. I watched this yesterday. I had it taped on my DVR, and I was been meaning to watch it. And then once you said, because once you said road trip movie, I wanted to make sure that Smokey the Bandit kind of, and I was going to do it, but then you said, oh, I want Smokey the Bandit. I go, shoot. I still got a chance to watch it, but no, I loved it. You know, I understand kind of why everybody does love this movie. You know, the music was great in it too, mm-hmm. though they're very repetitive songs, but I'm pretty sure those songs were made for that movie.
Pretty sure they were written by Jerry Reed, who played Cletus.
Okay. Yeah. I'm gonna tell you, I sure love that Basset Hound, though.
Fred.
Fred, the Basset
Hound. Fred's looking a little rough around the edges.
You know, but, I mean, it's just, it's one of those movies, it's like, you really can't be too critical of, because it gave you what basically the whole movie was about, you know. Mm-hmm. I love the chemistry between Burt Reynolds and Sally Field. Throughout the whole movie, it's just kind of you could see that them being a couple together.
Mm-hmm.
They definitely, you know, that scene where they're at the bridge, like, you never take your hat off, do you? He goes, I take my hat off for one thing and one thing only. And you kind of see that Sally Field was more of an independent woman and not more of a, some women come off as, I guess, submissive women. You know what I mean?
Yeah, kind especially the... back in those times.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you... Prior to those times, because that was kind of the beginning / middle of the huge air quotes feminism movement, where everyone started going for equal rights, which is great.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, historically speaking, that's kind of
Historically speaking,
I'm not
women
knocking it.
Yeah, no, just not at all.
Throwing that out there.
So for all our women listeners, we're not misogynists or anything. but no, back then, you know, it's just a lot of women kind of were more, I guess, like you're saying, more submissive. But she kind of was a strong female character, and you know, and that's the reason partly why she didn't want to get married.
Yeah.
Because she had that choice. She was able to make that choice because she was such a strong female. But when she was like, take off your hat if you want to or not. But she basically wanted him to take off his hat so she could kiss him. But, it's, you know, it's just throughout that, you know, that they were kind of just meant to be together. because they were kind of the yin to yang, because Bannon had probably never met a woman like her before. Mm-hmm. Someone who could tie him down, you know. I loved the movie. Jackie Gleason was hilarious. Buford T. Justice, you know, kind of, you know who I am. You know, kind of just the whole time. Oh, and then the subtle racism to the African American sheriff. He goes, "Thought you would be a little taller." And, you know, and we all kind of know, you know, seeing that now, I go, he didn't mean that he was taller. He just had never seen a black sheriff before.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, definitely a movie of the times, but there's definitely a lot of things that hold up very, very well.
Yes.
I don't even know if it's illegal to transport beer anymore. I mean, obviously... Yeah. 400 cases is a lot different than, you know, if I were to buy a case of beer in Texarkana, Texas, and drive across the country with it.
The version nowadays would be weed.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'll tell you, I have some friends who live in Oklahoma. They drive to the border of Texas because in Oklahoma, the beer is lower alcohol per volume than it is in Texas.
That just makes sense.
So, well, I mean, because in Oklahoma they have a law, I guess their beer can't be past a certain per volume or whatever. So they go down to Texas and they buy their beer and come back, you know, because it's stronger.
Well, that's just responsible. I mean, and fiscally responsible. It's right. Gonna
exactly
take less beer to get you drunk, so you're gonna drink less beer. So, presuming it's approximately the same cost, you know, it just makes sense.
Exactly.
I'm amused by the fact that there are two sequels to this.
Yes, the second one I have seen, and it makes everything way more ridiculous. Like, there's literally a showdown with two lines of semi trucks coming in at a line of police cars.
I also am amused by the fact that the third movie, like, Burt Reynolds doesn't even come in until a cameo at the end.
Yeah, he's like a flashback only.
I'm most amused by the fact that the second one is called Smokey and the Bandit 2, but the third one is called Smokey and the Bandit Part 3. which makes me think that the people who named it didn't even know the other two. Also, they were a series of television films called Bandit Goes Country, Bandit, Beauty and the Bandit, and Bandit Silver Angel.
Did Burt Reynolds star in all of those?
No.
Okay. Oh, man.
Burt Reynolds was in the first two and kind of the third.
The first one was the second highest grossing movie of the year.
Yeah.
What was the first?
Star Wars.
Oh, that makes sense.
What? It didn't beat out Star Wars. That's a shame.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, yeah. It's just a heck of a fun movie. Like, it's great in that aspect. Like, is it ever gonna live up to like the legacy of, say, Star Wars or 2001 or like Citizen Kane? You know, one of those iconic movies? No.
What about Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which it did more money than? That blow your mind?
You talk to any film scholar, and I'm sure they have watched and respected Close Encounters. They probably have seen Smokey and the Bandit.
I think that's probably a requirement. You know, you kind of have to see Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah, like it's, I don't know. If you're talking farces, I feel like this should be in the story or in the discussion at the very least. If you're talking about pesky sheriffs, this is the go-to movie.
I mean, and the stunt work was good, great in this movie too. Mm-hmm. Honestly, the stunt work and the camera work was great.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're a fan of mustaches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fast cars and mustaches and a lot of truck drivers.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I guess there's no DOT hours anywhere. going on in here.
Nope. No way stations anywhere.
Yeah. No, but you know, I had fun watching it. I really did. And because I taped it on Country Music Television Channel, whatever. And the movie's only 1 hour and 30 minutes, but the recorded time was 3 hours. Like there was like 10 minutes between each. There was like 10 minutes of commercial between each like point. I was like, geez, really? Just I want to get through. I wanted to get to the next part. You know, I wanted to see what was going on next. I mean, I kind of had an idea, but I just wanted to watch it. But no, I thoroughly enjoyed all of these movies. I think they're all great movies, and I think they epitomized road trips in every aspect of the word.
And then there's the movie called Road Trip.
And I thought about doing that, but you know, I kind of wanted to go indie. I wanted to kind of, and I, except for Dan, I think me and Andrew went indie.
Yeah.
Indie road trips.
I mean, obviously mine was pretty big back in 1977. Yeah.
The biggest road trip movie. But no, and another reason, like there was plenty of other movies that we could have chosen. The reason I didn't do Planes, Trains, and Automobiles is because we did that for our holiday special. So go back and listen to our holiday special.
Yeah.
And then Due Date, you know, I think that's also a good road trip movie. I think that's an underrated movie in general. And I mean, kind of what else do you guys, what are some of your other favorite road trip movies?
My second choice was going to be Grind. Another one of those situations where it's not a great movie, but I watched it at the right time in my life to really connect with it. And it's a lot of fun. I like the music work in that one too, and the one-liners, which I guess is what makes me enjoy road trip movies. Music and one-liners.
What probably comes to mind for me is probably Vacation.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Goofy movie. The big movie when I was a kid.
Oh, good one.
Yeah. And what else? It's funny, there's a staple of sort in the country. Like in American film, it's just sort of like, it's funny, it's its own genre. But it's not, I mean, it really is in a way.
There's also the classic, it's a mad world.
Sure. Oh,
great,
yeah.
Great movie.
Rat Race. Yeah.
Yeah, Rat Race. You know, Rat Race.
Somewhat remake.
It's an ace. It's an ace. I mean.
Silly movie. So, yeah, it's good stuff. Cool. Well, let's go ahead and wrap it up.
Should we pretend to pick what Rudy Jacob
I bet Rudy would have chosen Rat Race.
I'm gonna say Jacob picked the Martin Lawrence Disney and Martin Lawrence
college
Disney
trip
comedy college roommate or college road trip.
I totally don't agree with you that that's what he would have chosen, but I like to think that it is.
Starring Martin Lawrence and what's that?
Kyla Pratt,
the late girl from Disney,
Raven Simone.
Raven.
Yeah.
That's what Jacob would have in the record books. That's what Jacob would have.
Well, you heard it here.
Classic.
We gonna do what they say can't be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm westbound, just watch old bandit run. Keep your foot hard on the pedal, some devil mind them brakes. Let it all hang out, cause we got a run to make. The boys are thirsty in Atlanta, and there's beer in Texarkana, and we'll bring it back no matter what it takes. Westbound and down, 18 wheels are rolling. Are we gonna do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm westbound, just watch old bandit run.
Cool. Let's move into our credits segment. Tyler, what do you got?
Well, I had the great and finally advantageous opportunity to see the movie Boyhood. I don't know if you guys have seen it.
Nope.
Oh my God, what a great movie. What Richard Linklater did is a cinematic achievement, what he was able to do with this film. From top to bottom, the movie as a whole was great. It was 2 hours and 45 minutes, and I loved every single second of it. To be able to do what he did, I don't think would be able, might not be able to be done again. Well, obviously, because it took 12 years. Or will be
compared to it.
Or, yeah, I don't think anything will be able to compare to what he did. I don't know. Andrew, did you see the movie?
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah, it's wonderful.
Oh, it's fantastic.
I had some nitpick. I definitely had a couple scenes. It's a very long movie. And I had some problems here and there. But as a whole, I mean, it's such an achievement as a whole, I can't really... It comes off as more nitpicky than anything, but yeah, it's wonderful. Yeah, the buzz is definitely. I mean, it totally is worth what you've heard about it.
I think it deserves at least an Oscar nomination.
Oh yeah, no question. My third favorite I've seen this year. It's pretty. It's pretty good there.
Yeah, I mean that and Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, those are probably my top two movies so far that I've seen. But for sure, I mean, because watching this movie, you know, and especially me growing up in Texas too, you know, it was like there was a scene where the kid was watching Dragon Ball Z. You know, shit, I was watching Dragon Ball Z at his age. I mean, I was doing everything that he basically was doing. I was doing the same at my age, minus the photography and stuff like that. But everything else, you know, and I'll tell you, I don't know, Dan, have you seen this movie yet?
No.
Okay, well, I won't get to it, but maybe me and Andrew talk after the movie.
Well, it's gonna hit us pretty hard simply because it's from our. I mean, he's growing up in our generation, so.
Well, I'll tell you what I meant was when there was two specific times with him where you know something was happening, which I loved, and just I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
We'll
have to talk about it after. But for sure, definitely Boyhood. If you have a chance to see it, if it's still in theaters around where you are, definitely go see it. It's worth the money. It's worth the time. It's worth everything for that day. Make a trip. Make a day, an afternoon of it. And then also the two quick other things. Destiny. Been playing that for the past 3 weeks or so, or a couple weeks. It's fantastic. I love it. And then I got the iPhone 6, and I am in love with the iPhone 6. Hands down. Awesome phone. But that's all I got.
I'm playing Destiny also, but I have a very mixed relationship with it.
I agree. The story sucked, but I think everything else... I mean, me playing with my friends, and because we have a clan, you know, it's fun. I think once the raids and stuff for lower levels are opening up and kind of be able to do that, I think it's going to be a lot better.
I'm at level 20, and I don't even know what to do.
You got to look for light armor. I'm a 26. I'm a 26. You got to look for light armor.
Once I'm done with all the missions, like once I've played the missions, that's it. I'm out. Like that's pretty much fine. I'm playing to beat it.
No, you can't do that. You got to play the Crucible. You got to play the Stripe missions.
I'll be fine with it.
You have to. What are you playing it on?
What do you mean?
What system?
Oh, 360.
Okay. Should get an Xbox One.
I ain't paying that money. Maybe if does Master Chief Collection come out in 360?
No, Xbox One.
Okay, well then that might if that doesn't push me, then it'll take for the next Halo for me.
That definitely should push you because I'm definitely getting Master Chief Collection. It's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, that might have to be the show.
The push.
Yeah. As much as I don't want to buy that because I prefer to buy the PlayStation.
Well, then we can be friends and we can play.
There you go. That's true.
So you'll have a friend. And then I can bring my friends, and they'll be your friends.
Friends. Awesome. Mine's kind of a little strange one. I stumbled across the anime show Psycho Pass this week, and it's set in the future, like anime tends to be, and it's very sci-fi. It's kind of Minority Report, where they have a technology called the PsychoPass, where it analyzes your, I guess, your mannerisms, your brain waves, and tells, like, if you're going to be violent or if you're going to commit a crime. Basically, it judges people as latent criminals, and the show follows a new detective who runs the one of the police squads, which consists of a couple latent criminals whose basically only job they could take is to hunt down other latent criminals. And it's along the lines of Ghost in the Shell, with the procedural feel set around this, you know, high concept sci-fi. And I've seen about 5 or 6 episodes, and I think there's 22 in the first season. Second season's coming out in a month or two. And so far, it's been pretty awesome. So jump on the bandwagon for that one if you're interested in science fiction anime.
Is it on Netflix?
It is on Netflix, yeah.
Do you like Full Metal Alchemist?
I haven't seen enough of it to judge it.
Okay, well, if you do watch it, watch Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. Don't watch the other one. Watch Out Brotherhood. Okay. It's a lot better.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind. That's one that I haven't got into because there's just so much of it, so it's...
Yeah, no, I agree.
Hard to commit to that, you know?
No, I agree. My friend got me into it, me and my other friend, and we started watching it. Just like another show called Sword Art Online, which is really good. That's also on Netflix, so...
All right. Andrew, you're up.
If you have a sick sense of humor, like I do, and an appreciation for tongue-in-cheek genre, go out and see The Guest as soon as you can, because it is just a whole big ball of fun. I don't think I've had as much fun watching a movie since Guardians. The Guest, if you don't know what it is a very genre-y sort of 80s-esque revenge sort of movie. I don't want to give away because one of the pleasures is sort of discovering what it is and laughing along with it.
Is it real bloody and gory?
It's pretty bloody. It's not that bloody. If you're in it for like that, you're probably going to be kind of disappointed.
Okay.
But yes.
I'm not a big fan of blood and gore, really.
There is blood in it, but it's not like... No, it's not like gratuitous in regards to that. It's, you know what, it's a hard movie for me to describe because
it's got great reviews. I saw it on Rotten Tomatoes. They were giving it great reviews. Yeah. Everybody's saying, and it's got my guy from Downton Abbey on it.
It's sort of picture a low budget, corny ass 80s. Action film that probably would have starred like Dolph Lundgren.
Okay.
But then imagine it being done by a filmmaker who knows what he's doing and has his tongue in his cheek the entire time, with an amazing performance by Dan Stevens, who knows like exactly what he's doing with the role. It's hard to explain if you don't see it, but it's clearly like a basically the best way I can describe it is a sort of comedy version of a B movie. A B action sort of like conspiracy movie sort of, but again, you know, the pleasure is seeing it. So it's if you see the trailer, you might not get that sense unless you understand kind of what it's going for. But it's just a lot of fun. You might not think, judging by the poster and that, like, it's gonna be fun. But trust me, it's just like a blast to watch. Like, for instance, there's like. I'm trying to give an example of tone without hinting away. It's like one guy dies, and he's giving the thumbs up. That sort of like gives you an example, and it's a big moment, maybe my favorite moment in the movie.
Oh,
but
wow,
that gives you a sort of example of what. Okay. You know, there's a scene where this main, basically the story is Dan Stevens from Downton Abbey is playing this. Is playing this soldier who is friends with this other soldier who died, and he's come to his buddy's family's house in the South to sort of, because he promised the brother that he would take care of them. And there's like, you know, a shot where there's this sort of 21-year-old hot sister, and he the main guy's about 28. There's this 21-year-old hot sister, and she like knocks on the bathroom door and is like, "Hey, I need to go use the bathroom." And the door opens up, and it's this like blinding white light and steam. And the guy comes out, and he's in like just the towel, and really corny music comes up, and he's like, you know, ripped, and he's like, "Oh, sorry, I didn't know you were waiting out there." And she's just like, "Oh, oh." It might not sound like it works, but the director, I mean, he did this movie called You're Next that came
out
a lot of press. I did not like it at all. I thought it was a complete waste of my time. But everything that people said about that movie totally resonated for me with this one. Like, it was totally on point. I'm not sure. It might be on demand. I'm not positive. I know that it's mostly in the small theaters now, but definitely, if you can't see it in theaters, wait for it to come out on video. It's a great one I can imagine watching with friends, like as a late night movie. That's really what it's meant for. It's like a midnight madness kind of movie.
And it's at 90. It's at 94% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, it's really fucking good.
Well, I mean, because that's what I haven't seen Your Next. That's still in my
don't Netflix. Bother.
Don't bother.
I was totally unimpressed by it. Yeah.
Okay.
The reason that movie got so much press is it's like it both works on its own as a horror movie, but also as a sort of deconstruction, tongue-in-cheek comedy. And I just did not find that. But with this, it's totally that. Like this fulfills what I thought the other one was going to be.
Okay. Yeah, and like I said, I love Dan Stevens. I loved him in Downton Abbey. I think he's a great. I think he's a really good actor.
I don't watch Downton Abbey, so this is my introduction to him, but he's so good.
Okay.
He's really good in this. Like,
yeah.
if I was doing the Oscars tomorrow, he'd be nominated. Like, it's not a dramatic role at all, but he's so good.
Yeah.
Like, it's the kind of thing where the guy just knows the tone. Like, he totally gets what the movie's going for, and he's 100% on board with it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so you think he could get an Oscar now?
No. God, no. This is too. No. I'm just saying, from my perspective, from a purely transformative acting standpoint, if I was giving out awards, he would be nominated at some point.
Okay.
But no way. This movie is so like below the level of award contender, like most people consider awards worthy. No way.
Okay. Yeah, like I said, I saw that, and like I said, I love Dan Stevens, and, you know, it kind of intrigued me, because I saw, it was like an early buzz on it, and then it kept...
Yeah, it's definitely...
Okay.
Sweet. Quick side note on that one, Simon Barrett, the guy who wrote that, was recently on the Nerdist Writers panel, so go give that a listen. Coolio. We'll be back next time with more movies. If you want to leave us feedback, feel free to visit us at thecinemasters.blogspot.com. Shoot us an email at thecinemasters@gmail.com. Or give us a phone call at 404-594-2567 and leave us some voicemails. We're also on the Facebooks, so you can find us there. Yeah, rate and review us on iTunes. It's a good way to get the word out and find more listeners. So, yeah. As always, thank you for listening. I am Daniel Janes.
I'm Andrew Miller.
And I'm Tyler Crouch.
And that certainly was a podcast.
Indubitably.
The Cinemasters Podcast is an Autological Media Productions podcast. You can leave us feedback at thecinemasters.blogspot.com or send us an email at thecinemasters@gmail.com. Please rate and review us on iTunes and like us on Facebook, and go over to almppodcasts.blogspot.com to check out our other shows. As always, thank you for listening.
I like it.
I know, it's great, right?
Another!
Bye-bye, boy!
Have fun storming the castle.
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye-bye. Bye.